This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 on this chilly Wednesday morning. Chill, what do you call it? Chill factor, wind factor, wind chill factor in the 30s. But temperature itself, 45, going up to the 50s. Ronald Serpas joins us, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police. And we like to pick his brain every Wednesday, get his thoughts on crime. How you doing, Chief?
I'm good, Tommy, and you?
I'm okay. I just talked to Project NOLA, Brian Lagarde, with the criminologist executive director of Project NOLA, about the crime cameras that they have and the real-time monitoring. How much of a help has that been as you look back on 2024?
Well, if you think about it, the opportunity for videos, be they public, private, business, give witness statements without the need for a witness so that police can develop more probable cause. A video by itself generally won't convict someone, but it certainly leads to the probable cause. Secondly, the advancement of the number of those across the country, across the world, if you will. Third, the case in New York is probably a very good example. What has been released by the NYPD is a series of shots of pictures of the face of the suspected murderer in several different places. That helps when you're thinking about your investigation, because then you say, well, were you at 5th and Main? No, I wasn't. Is this you? Mm-hmm. Right? So there's just a great amount of utility. In a general sense, whenever the government uses public space to observe conduct, there will always be some level of ACLU-type concern, which is valid. Let's argue it out. Let's go debate the issues. But Tommy, if you think about it, you and I've seen this 1,000 times in New Orleans. At the corner of Law and Desire, 100 people are having a party. Two guys get in a shootout. Nobody saw anything. These videos are helping us close that gap. Sometimes people are afraid to testify for real reasons that we can't ignore. Sometimes they don't care to testify because they're engaged in activity that they don't want to be identified in. But if there's cameras there, it can give police a lot of opportunity to bring a case for prosecution.
So when you say video doesn't necessarily lead to a conviction, that's not to say that it never leads to a conviction, but sometimes the video is inconclusive, almost like an NFL replay?
It's a little bit of all, yes, it's a little bit of all of those. I mean, the video may show, it's kind of like DNA evidence in this analogy, and then I'll do the second one. DNA may say that's my DNA, but was there a reason for my DNA to be there? Could there have been some other alternative? That's what video can be, too. Sometimes it'll be, yeah, that's my video, but there's a whole bunch of other reasons why it's there. Likewise, sometimes the tie goes to the runner. The video doesn't do anything to advance you. But in both cases, it gives detectives more ideas and questions to ask. And that's really its greatest value. And sometimes, in the case of someone who shoots someone in front of a video, it's a little bit different. But just having more information to challenge as an investigator. And remember, Tommy, the Constitution protects a defendant with the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendment to be able to defend themselves. So there's more information available for everybody to see as they make decisions on going to trial or plea bargain. It's good evidence. And final point, 20 years ago when this first started, there was mostly government cameras in New Orleans and other cities that had already moved to private and business. Tommy, I was back only about 15 minutes, and you might remember there was a young cab driver from Gretna, I think, who was killed right around 6th and Annunciation Street. It was the camera in the bar looking out at street level, not a government camera on a pole. It was the camera at the bar window or door that got a street level picture that was like a high school graduation picture of the offender. that helped make that case. Now we have much more of those cameras in those positions.
What do the numbers show as far as crime? You know, because we've had a spate of violent crime, and I want to talk about French Quarter and concealed carry and all that in a second. But what do the numbers show about crime in the city and for people who wonder if the city's safe or not? Looking at the number, tell you what, let me take a break. I just realized what time it is. So when we come back, we'll talk about what the numbers show, how you can relate the numbers to actually feeling safe on the streets of New Orleans, and more with Ronald Surpass, our guest. Every Wednesday morning, we go take a deep dive into crime in the city and other areas. He knows what he's talking about. Been around. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, been on a job a long time. So, Chief, when it comes to the statistics and the numbers, and I know you're a numbers guy, how does that relate and compare to last year, and also relate to people that want to feel safe on the streets of the city?
You know, there's three things could be true at the same time. One, the crime collection data system of the NOPD would demonstrate that crime reports are going down. Good thing, thumbs up. Secondly, we know from significant research, social science, that people gather crime information from friends, family, and neighbors, second to local news. And third, there's going to be fluctuations, and they're going to go back and forth. What a lot of chiefs try not to do is be so dead set on one set of data that the audience that feels separately thinks that they're not paying attention to their concern. So you need to measure them both. You need to understand them both. But really the key is recognizing that two things can be true at the same time. People can feel crime is up and it could be down, and vice versa. And finally, Tommy, crime reporting by the government lags the events by many, many months, and citizens' perceptions will change. By the time the December reports come out from activity in June, they might have completely changed their opinion. Either they feel worse or they feel better, and that data kind of stands in the way. It's just a matter of managing more than one thing that can be true at the same time.
When it comes to property crime, somebody texted us in. I think it's an interesting text. And people feeling safe. Do property crimes affect their feeling of safety? Can they distinguish between somebody breaking into their shed and stealing their power saw as opposed to somebody trying to harm them personally? Or do they look at it as, well, man, if I'd have been out in the shed, maybe I'd be dead?
That's a great question. The numbers of property crimes are 4 to 5 times more than one individual crime. So more people experience property crime. My experience has been they feel it as an invasion of their private space, be it a garage or a shed. It's still their private space. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you remember when we had the rash of people's car windows being broken? Mm-hmm. Most people had to lose a whole day of work the next day to go get that window fixed, or they had to feel the unsafeness that their car was attacked right outside their door. So I think it's a little bit of both, Tommy. It's not necessarily personally hurting you, but it invades your sense of personal security in and around your home and your business and your property. So I wouldn't spend a lot of time not thinking that it's as hurtful to people, because if you've only been burglarized in your car once in your life, that's still a crime in your mind that invaded your personal perception of safety.
Along those lines, Tommy, go ahead.
About half of all crime never even goes reported to the police. Mm-hmm. That's really one of the undercurrents here, too, is so much crime that goes unreported. We don't really know how those people feel unless you go into community meetings and meet with them.
So what did NOPD do? What happened to stop all of the window smashes and all of that stuff?
My perception would be more likely that two things could have happened at the same time. One, the group of kids that age who felt that that was their day's fun, mm-hmm, kind of shrunk, and or the juvenile court got on top of it, because the police were arresting a lot of people, if you remember. A lot of people were being snatched on these grabs of breaking people's windows. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. Nashville is a city 3 times bigger than New Orleans almost, and manages to survive with one juvenile court who appoints magistrates that works for that one judge. Here in New Orleans, we've got to have 6, 7, 8 of them, however many there are. Think about it. That's just not kind of what helps to give a consistent, clear message of how juvenile crime is going to be dealt with. Each of those judges see things differently within the law. However, I do think two things. I think the police were doing a pretty good job of catching a lot of these young kids. There's usually not a lot of them. And the juvenile court might have held them a little more accountable.
Real quick, I want to pick your brain on this New York shooting and this guy that, you know, in one way is brilliant, in another way goes into McDonald's with apparently the murder weapon. I don't know. Have you seen things like this before?
Yeah, I think, a lot of times police can solve crimes because people do inexplicably stupid things after they commit the crime. And that is not unusual to me. It's not like the everyday criminal, but this kid obviously looked like he thought he was a badass. He goes and shoots a man in his back. That's cowardly. Mm-hmm. Then disappears into the crowd, and suddenly I guess he thought he was safe and could return to acting normally and just show up at a McDonald's, and it didn't work.
That's just head-scratching to me, but I guess you've seen a lot of things in your career that have made you scratch your head when it comes to criminal behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time, as always. Okay. Ronald Sir, past professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Nashville City Police, Washington State Police, and consults numerous departments. We like to pick his brain. We'll come back, talk to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. Right now, time for WWL First News.